Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with us today is our special guest, Adam Chaffetz, President and CEO of Health and Communications, Inc. Welcome, Adam.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And conducting the interview today for the first time is my partner, Craig Franco. He's a litigator at Odin Feldman and Pittleman, and he's great on his feet, and that's why we invited him today to be our special co-host and interviewer. Take it away, Craig.
A way to set the bar high, Wayne. Thanks. Well, Adam, why don't you tell the audience a bit about what Health Communications, Inc. is and what the TIPS program is.
Well, basically, Health Communications is an organization that was set up to implement the TIPS program. And the TIPS program is a program that was originally designed to teach servers and sellers of alcohol how to recognize and detect intoxication in their patrons before it happens and prevent it. But it's set up in such a fashion so that it teaches a server how to allow a customer to drink sociably and responsibly without getting drunk. So it's kind of a positive approach to a lot of this restriction stuff that's going on in our industry today, and I mean the hospitality industry. And we kind of expanded it out after the initial program to cover off-premise establishments like convenience stores, grocery stores, package stores, and liquor stores. We have a concessions program that deals with stadiums, racetracks, county fairs, a social function program that deals with private clubs or golf organizations or like American Legions, and a gaming program, which of course deals with casinos. But after a while, We track and we stay in touch with a lot of people we train. A lot of the people that came back kept saying, how come there isn't some onus put on the actual consumer themselves? And so we came up with some consumer programs, and probably our most successful one has been the university program that teaches students how to intervene on their friends while they're out with drinking with them. And it's really interesting because the students themselves are actually there, and you know, you can educate them all you want on information, but if they don't have the tools to step in while the situation's happening, it's really kind of worthless. We also have a program for workplace, like if you're out drinking with your legal buddies that you work with and somebody starts to get too intoxicated, you can step into those situations, or your radio buddies or coworkers. And we also have tips for parents, which is for the home. So if you're hosting a party, they can set a good role model in terms of drinking behavior for when their children become of legal drinking age. And then we also have a seniors program, which is actually for the elderly community, which is the fastest growing population of alcohol abusers in the country.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing, what the TIPS program, what it's doing to intervene. What are you teaching the servers and users?
Well, we teach a lot of different things, and there isn't one black and white way of dealing with it. What it really focuses in on is the unique server's people skills, whether they, you know, compliment customers, whether they stroke people's egos, whether they use a friend, in terms of dealing with these situations. But probably the absolute most important part is we build confidence in a person's own unique skills to step into a situation. Because there's a lot of stuff out there that says, well, you should do this and, you know, you shouldn't do that. But, you know, it's really easy to say that when you're not in that situation. Stepping into these situations is extremely difficult, and oftentimes people are terrified to do this. And so if we build people's confidence in their own unique social skills, they'll have the confidence to step in and do something. And that's the most important thing. You can have all the information in the world. If you don't use it, it's worthless.
So why don't we back up? How did TIPS get started?
Well, TIPS got started through my dad. My dad was the founding director of the National Institutes on Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse, which is what at the time part of HEW, now HHS. And he was considered the world's leading authority on alcoholism and alcohol abuse. And he spent all these years building up treatment centers and really starting that industry to take care of people that had problems with alcohol. And after he left government, he was kind of a little distraught because he had never done anything prevention-wise. And so what he decided to do is develop a program to teach servers to recognize drinking behaviors in their customers. And if they are starting to head down a road of becoming problem drinkers, to do some interventions to slow them down. Well, that was 1979. And in 1982, he completed the program, and that's when MAD came into existence. And all of a sudden, this big fury over drunk driving occurred. And that's when he said, wow, there's another avenue. And all of a sudden, there was incredible litigious society going on when it came to drunk driving, and people were getting sued left and right. And they saw this as a way of protecting themselves from lawyers who were suing them.
Sure.
Sorry.
Sure.
Lawyers don't do things like that.
Well, lawyers, clients.
We don't do that.
Right. And so from there, what is TIPS, you know, gone from that very beginning, and where is it today?
Well, we expanded into those other programs, but in terms of how far the reach has come, we have trained, what we do is we teach people how to teach the program in all various parts of the country and actually internationally, and we have trained over 60,000 trainers around the world that actually implement the program, and there are over 3.5 million people currently certified in the TIPS program. And last May, actually it's been a year, we did our first class in Antarctica. And I was like,
is there a bar in Antarctica? I mean,
actually,
where there's servers?
That's the question I had. And it turns out at this one station, this trainer that we sent down, well, happened to be in the military and was sent down there, said there were 18 bars. And he did an experimental class. And they thought, this is insane. And when they taught the first class, they said, this is nothing what we expected. And not only do we think we need this, we're going to train all 18 bars. And so they really liked it because it's a positive way of dealing with it. It's not anti-alcohol. It's like, okay, we want you to have a good time. We want you to enjoy alcohol, but not get into trouble with it. And that's all. It's customer service. It's taking care of your customers. And that's really what the program's essence is about.
You know, there's so many different types of people who, when they drink, they become different people. You know, there's the social drinker, and there's the person who comes out of their shell, and there's the person who likes to get into fights. I mean, do you actually have techniques of identifying their personalities when they walk into the bar?
Well, if you've ever worked in a bar or been a server, and you've lasted longer than 2 weeks, you are a people person.
Right.
And these people that, and I did it for a while, I loved it, the best job I ever had. You begin to read people, and you begin, that's what makes the job interesting. And you don't hire somebody because they mix drinks well. You hire people because they either attract a bunch of people, or people will come to see them, or they got a good following. And as a result, those are people. And they can read people. They can tell whether somebody's going to be an angry drunk, or who's going to hit on who, or how somebody's going to respond to a situation, or who's going to give the best tips. And so there's a whole bunch of different things that go into the person that actually becomes the server, because that's the skills they have coming in. And so they can read those people. That's what makes it so interesting, is the different folks you get in. But having confidence to step into those situations can be a little trying, and that's what we're really good at doing.
I see.
Do you think it makes an impact with the servers of alcohol? I mean, are they naturally already have the skills, or is there something about the TIPS program that's really teaching them how to intervene with potential drunk or
problem
drinker?
It's a really good point, because, you know, a lot of times people say, well, you know, I'm not sure, I don't know. And when we train them, they're like, wow, this is really good stuff, but I'm not sure. We get between 11 and 12 calls a week from servers, you know, and we train thousands of servers, so maybe there's more, but of situations they've stepped into and dealt with and prevented somebody from either getting behind the wheel of a car or getting alcohol to an underage person. And so I can't say that all of those would have prevented an accident or possibly a death. But, you know, this is over 30 years. So there's been quite a few people that have felt strongly enough to call us back. We've got it from university students where they actually have told us about taking kids to the emergency room, even though the school said they'd get in trouble if they were underage drinking, and saved people's lives. I mean, tons and tons of stories like this. So when I get actual names and people telling me about this, that's how I know it's really effective. You know, you get into all these things about the drinking age and all these other poster signs and ads on TV that supposedly do all this good. And I'm like going, do you have any names of people who have actually responded to this? We have names. We have human beings that have called us and told us they've actually taken action. And that's what I feel is valuable. If you're not getting people really saying that it's been valuable, how do you really know if they're not using it at the grassroots level?
You know, I had a question for you. I have one kid in college and another one going to college next year. And I often wonder, I mean, I know that drinking goes on because it happened when you and I were in college, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the real question is, who is your client? Is the university hiring you to bring you in? Is it the fraternities that are hiring you? I mean, who is your client?
It depends. Sometimes it's all of the above. Sometimes it's the students themselves. And if you think about it, if you're in a situation with your friends, and fraternities do it for this reason too, there is some liability issue,
right?
But you're supposed to be brothers. You're supposed to be friends. And if you really care about your friends, you don't want them to get into trouble. You don't want them to die. You don't want them to get hurt. You don't want them to end up being in a situation with somebody they don't want to be with. And so as a result, we all look after one another. And the same thing has hit home in the military that we've trained. You know, you're supposed to watch each other on the battlefield. Well, when it comes to a situation when you're non-military, but you're out and you have to be prepared the next day, or you don't want to embarrass your group, platoon, whatever,
right.
You want to watch out for them in social situations. So it all comes down to, you know, a little bit of brother's keeper, but these are the people you care about in your community. And to take it even a step further, they're out on the roads in your community, and it could be somebody you care about. So don't we all want to protect our community in that little way by letting by still letting people have a good time, but not go too far?
Have you any particular stories putting you on the spot a bit that you can recall now that really made an impact on you when you either got a letter or a phone call or something like that?
Well, actually, it has to do with what you just said. I have tons of them, but this one in particular was this one of my trainer's sons, Sean, and she had wanted to train the senior class before they graduated from high school. And the school said, we can't condone this because, you know, you show people drinking. We don't want to encourage that, but if you want to do it voluntarily, fine. So she trained them. They said, wow, this is the first time we've had anything on drugs or alcohol where they haven't spoken down to us. And, you know, he went off to college. And so a couple months later, he sent his mom an email, and she sent it to me, and she said, you know, last night, you know, I went to a party. He was 17 years old at this time. You know, I had a little bit to drink, but it was a boring party. So I went home and I checked my email before I went to bed, and somebody had sent me an emergency email. Ernie's drunk too much. Please, you've got to come. And he went down to where they were. Ernie was passed out. His breathing was slow. His pulse was really slow. And he said, quick, call 911. They said, no, we'll get into trouble. He says, nope, call 911 right now. Not going to take this. The ambulance came, threw him into the ambulance with a sober friend, and he stayed with Ernie's girlfriend, who was drunk. Finally found somebody who wasn't drinking to give him a ride to the hospital. The doctor came out. The doctor said he had had 16 shots of vodka in 20 minutes.
Oh, my.
And his heart had stopped four times.
Oh,
and he
my.
Said, if you had waited another 15 minutes, I probably wouldn't have been able to save him. And I actually have used this in speeches that I've given. And some of the people came up to me and said, but he was 17 and he was drinking alcohol. And I'm like, so it's more important that somebody was drinking alcohol underage than saving somebody's life. And I'm like, our priorities are screwed up
that's
when
right.
that happens. I care about people not dying.
That's right.
You know, that's number one.
Right.
And so, you know, there's so many different, I have tons more stories like that, but that's the real essence. Are you really stepping in and saving somebody's life or preventing them from hurting themselves or hurting somebody else?
That's right.
So speaking of groups with authority and how they view it, how do governments view tips in your company? Do they approve of it? Do they discourage it?
Well, that's a great question, because I deal with that. And some state governments are really into it. They love us and they work with us, and it's a great relationship. Some governments make it really difficult and put incredible administrative duties on us that we got to fill out all this paperwork and jump through all these hoops. And I'm kind of like, isn't it the fact that it's effective the most important thing? And they said, no, that's not important. What's important that you meet the rules. And I'm like, so if you find a program, one of our competitors, let's say, or a local program that meets your rules but puts more drunk drivers out on the road and serves more underage people, you ought to approve that program. Their answer is yes. I have a real hard time dealing with that when I'm trying to implement a program with integrity and good faith and make sure that it's done well. And the state government turns to me and says, oh, it doesn't matter if it's effective. It just matters if it meets our rules.
Have you ever helped any of the governments in kind of drafting the rules and regulations for things like?
We've pretty much helped them all. Some have listened. Some have ignored us. And it's a little frustrating because, you know, we actually, you know, are represented in every state. So we pay taxes in every state. And I'm like going, I'm a taxpayer in your state and this is what you're doing. And so is this really putting forth the best mode to protect the citizens of that state or that city for that matter? And oftentimes I feel that doesn't seem to be in their interest, which blows my mind. But as I've gotten more and more into this, you know, oftentimes some of the government regulation is so way overdone. It just amazes me.
Well, it's kind of like sex education. And with that, you know, we have about a minute left. Is there any last point that you want to make, Adam, about tips and HCI?
Well, there's a lot of, we work closely with a lot of insurance companies, and we do work with a lot of enforcement groups. So if, you know, to help protect people's licenses or fines, or if they want to get insurance discount, if you want to get in touch with us, we have a website. It's www.gettips.com, and that's also our 800 number, 1-800-GET-TIPS, and there are tips trainers all across the country and even parts of the world.
Thank you. Thank you for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Sure, my pleasure.
Adam Chaffetz, President and CEO of HCI and the TIPS program, and Craig Franco, my partner at Odin, Feldman & Pittleman. Thanks for being our special co-host today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks.
Tune in next week for another special topic and special guest on Blueprint for Wealth. Until then, have a great week and be safe.